So yeah, I think that in the end, this doesn't change a whole lot, like Shane was saying, but it's something. It's a positive step in the right direction, and it's a great way to end Lanning's first season with the Ducks.
I'm also just happy we made Mac Brown sad.
I might argue a really good practice would mean just as much, but that's just that.
And this is why we're such good podcast, because we listen to things so differently. Hello and welcome to the Flock Pod. We are at hashtag 137 here in beautiful Chopper Base. The Avaterior producers are playing with their puppy iPads out in the living room, loving life. If you'd please be so kind, go find us at the Flock Pod on all of your major podcast streaming platforms. Click that subscribe button so you make sure to get that fresh flockness in your feed. Also, please give us a 5-star rating so you might get read here on the podcast. And that really helps us in particular on Apple to jump up in those algorithms. Also, please go find us on all of those major social media channels at the Flock Pod. You can find me at Coach Justin D on those same social media channels.
Shay.
Tell them where you are.
You can find me at BartenderShane6 on aforementioned Twitter and at WakaFlockaShane6 on the gram.
And we are, of course, joined once again today by Mr. Duckswire himself, Zachary Neal. Zach, how we doing, sir?
Doing good, man. It's officially the off season. No more football ahead until like what, April? So yeah, this is where we really thrive. This is where we have some fun.
Now we can just really focus and hone in on the 2024 recruiting class.
And of course,
just kidding. We're not doing that.
And of course, the triumphant return of three questions in the off season, which I know our fans have been clamoring for. So
yeah, we'll have to.
No, not today. Not today.
I told myself I was going to like keep like a notebook of all the questions I wanted to ask, so I'd have them ready for the off season. And I didn't follow through.
Same. Yeah. Yep, 100%. Well, we've got a great podcast for you guys today. We are going to go Holiday Bowl heavy. Great comeback last night for the Oregon Ducks, 28-27, or the North Carolina Tar Heels. We are going to give some season grades, looking back at our expectations in the preseasons and how this Oregon football team lived up to it, and then also revisit our players we were excited about draft and talk a little bit about that and how those teams shaped out, and then a little bit of news there at the end, and maybe a little revisit quickly on signing day also. So guys, this was a really fun football game. Like, even if you weren't a Duck fan or a Tar Heel fan, I think you would have been incredibly entertained watching this game. But let's just jump into our viewing experiences here. This is one of my favorite parts of the pod, just hearing how you guys actually watched the game. I want to throw this one to you first here, Zach. I want to hear about your viewing experience and just how this game went for you.
Yeah, I didn't go down to San Diego for this one, and I'm kind of happy I didn't, because it seemed like a lot of the reporters and fans trying to get down there for this game had a whale of a time trying to do so with all of the flight nonsense going on in our country right now. But just a normal
shout out Southwest.
Experience. Yeah, shout out Southwest. Yeah. Normal viewing experience at home for me. Nothing special really. It was nice. I got to just like hang out in my office and watch the game uninterrupted. And actually my wife and kid were at her mom's house for the game, and so it was a quiet household for me, no distractions.
Wow.
I actually feel like I got to really watch a lot of this game and take a lot of it in, so that was a lot of fun.
Nice. I was gonna ask like if it's like baby in the lap for you, you know, while you're watching a lot of games.
No, we luckily have it, so you know, when I'm working like for a game, my wife does a good job of taking me off of baby duty, which is nice.
She's a champ. She's an absolute champ. All right, Shane, throwing it over to you, my friend. Let's hear about your good old viewing experience.
First off, I just want to say I'm envious when Zach says, you know, when I'm working and watching the game, like, damn, that's cool. You know, whenever I float the, but babe, it's for the podcast. Like, it doesn't go that well.
Yeah,
for
it doesn't quite
much do you get paid for that podcast, Shane?
Hey, we've got $30 sitting in our Anchor account. We made a little bit of money.
ad reads aren't for nothing. Anyways, yeah, my viewing experience was good. I actually got to, you know, sit and watch this game live, watch this game in its entirety. What a weird, weird setup for a game it was at Petco Park. It was cool to have that, like, San Diego downtown kind of skyline in the back. It's a, I mean, it's a beautiful place for baseball games. It's just weird how we go through this cycle of, like, let's not play football on baseball fields. And like 3 to 4 years later, we're like, you know what we should do? We should play a football game on a baseball field. but yeah, I thought like the whole Fox production was really good. Ended up being a really long game. They had the elongated halftime. I think that was maybe to try and like fix the field, which we can get into that in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it was a really entertaining game. It was really back and forth. I hadn't got a chance to watch Drake May play at all this season. I'd heard a lot about him all year, and he was everything he was billed to be. Oregon looked, you know, I thought they were going to score 70 points when they came out of the gates. And then I still can't believe that game hit the under. When I like, because I didn't bet it. I was sitting there. I was like, I want to bet this over. I want to just be rooting for points and chaos. And then I didn't pull the trigger. The Oregon goes down, scores that first touchdown. Like, damn it, dude. This game's going to be 100 to 100. No, it's really, really stalled out.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I predicted, I think, 51-28 Ducks, which was triumphantly incorrect. I thought there was going to be an absolute ton of points in this game, and I really thought the Ducks were going to run away with it. Yeah, I was here in the beautiful Chopper Base watching the game. Had Miga and her sister over, and then Miga had a friend come over from work also to watch the game. So it was kind of fun to have kind of a group, you know what I mean, as opposed to just the three of us, which was a good time. It was... I felt the same way, Shane. I thought, especially once they scored that first touchdown, it was going to, the boat race was on, you know, here we go. But I think the player that really kind of turned the tide, if you will, in particular for that North Carolina defense, where is it? Cedric Gray. I mean, that kid was absolutely everywhere, all over the field. Looked like he knew the Ducks plays, like knew the playbook, you know, inside and out. I don't know if our OC was just being a little predictable there at times, but it looked like he was getting the call straight into his headset there for a minute. But just really, really impressed with his play overall. But yeah, the viewing experience was a good time. I mean, the comeback was great. It was actually fun because Miga's friend from work isn't really like a football fan per se, but she was just like, how do you guys do this all the time? How do you deal with like this stress? How do you... this is fun for you. This is like an enjoyable experience. And I was kind of reevaluating my life while she was saying that. But then I just came, it's like, this is just being a Duck fan. Like this was a Duck football game through and through. We can talk about the end also, and just like the elongated end and the drama there. The last 10 minutes of live time was just very, very stressful unnecessarily, I felt like. But it was interesting to watch the experience through like a non-Duck fan's eyes and just kind of get that. Oh yeah, you guys just enjoy like torturing yourself. Like this is basically what's going on. but yeah, great football game. Absolutely great football game. A good stage, I think. I mean, obviously it would have been nice to see the Ducks play a little bit better at times and kind of run away with this on a national stage. But to kind of have, you know, the nation's eyes to yourself there for a night is always a good experience. Bo Nix, man. Bo Nix and Bucky Irving just decided to throw this offense on their back and carry them. I was having some big time questions. Zach, I don't know if you can tell us any more about this. I'm sure you don't have any more information on it, but that ankle still doesn't look right. I mean, that the second and third quarter in particular, he looked like he was afraid to push off. He was running scared. You didn't see that from Bo Nix before. It looked like he was running not to get hurt. So do we have any more information on that ankle?
We honestly don't. I mean, that was one of the biggest questions going into this game, is because we saw him at the end of the regular season and he was hobbled, you know, significantly. And it changed the way that he played the game. I mean, you saw him just not really running at all against Oregon State at the end. And excuse me, that was one of my biggest, you know, concerns going into this game, is if he's not 100% healthy, which they never said that he was. They said, yeah, it's better than it was. But, you know, what does that mean? That could mean it's 1% better. It could mean it's 30% better. We don't know. But that was, you know, something I was a little bit concerned about, because, you know, make what you will of bowl games. I know they're fun, but they are, you know, glorified exhibition games. And this game in the grand scheme of things did not mean a ton for Bo Nix in his career. So I was afraid that he was going to go out there and get hurt. And, you know, I'm sure we will talk more about the playing surface they were on. I've got a definite strong opinion about that. It annoyed me quite a bit, but yeah, we definitely saw the injury affect Nix in this game. He only had 5 carries for 6 total yards. Like you're saying, he was avoiding contact and kind of going to the ground before he got hit, which, you know, I'm a I'm fine with if he is going to play. That's the good thing to do. I don't want him to get hit, but it was interesting how the ankle seemed to really affect his throwing and his accuracy. It's kind of like not having that solid, you know, stable plant leg that he could push off of. Really just kind of, he floated a few balls. He, you know, had a couple drops short. He threw a few, several balls behind the receiver. I mean, there was that interception to Terrence Ferguson, who was thrown way behind him. Great pick. Great play by North Carolina. And the touchdown pass to Troy Franklin was an incredible catch by Franklin, because he was way behind him and he just kind of extended backwards. But yeah, it was interesting to see how much he was still hobbled by that. But you know, thankfully we're in the off season now. He's got what, 8 months to get out there and get back to 100%, which I'm sure he can do. So yeah, that was just, it was interesting to see.
It was weird though.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Shane.
On Bucky Irving's touchdown run, Bo Nix caught up to him.
He was just sprinting down the field.
Yeah, and I think that, because that was fairly early on, that I was like, yeah, I wonder if the adrenaline kicked in and he did that. And then he was going back to the sideline. He's like, that fucking hurt. Yeah. Because it didn't seem like he was afraid to run on it, but he definitely seemed like he was afraid to like put all of his weight on one foot. Because that was, it seemed like every time that he went down when he was carrying the ball, it was like, all right, it's time to cut. I'm going to go to the ground. And then, yeah, and then some of those throws, it was just like he was going flat foot, and then he was getting happy feet, and then going, like, it was kind of going back and forth in the pocket as far as like how much weight he really wanted to put on that ankle. So I think it was like better. And then it was like, oh, you know, like I do this a lot. Like I've had this like shoulder issue, and like I'll let it, like I won't lift weights or do anything for like a couple weeks, and then I'll go back in the gym and just try and go like right back to where I was and be like, oh, yeah, no, 100%, not really, not there yet. So I think he might be like in that similar like zone of like, oh, it's better, but it's not.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised to find out if this is a high ankle sprain, you know, just the way that it's bothered him and the way that it's kind of stuck with him. And it just, I mean, because we don't really know. We haven't really heard, you know, what kind of an injury, what the actual mechanism was even. So interesting.
I've been told it's more of a foot injury.
You know, I guess that makes sense too. Yeah. Okay.
You know, I was told by someone that it was like a foot fracture. I have not gotten that confirmed at all, but like, that's what someone early on in the process told me. So, I'm not sure what it is, but I think it is something that, you know, definitely can be healed by sometime this off season.
I would be surprised if we hear about a surgery, you know, if he just goes in and gets something kind of cleaned up and whatnot. So, okay.
Yeah.
We've alluded to it a couple times. I'm going to step back and I'm going to clear out for you guys here. You guys just run a little two-man game. Shane, tell me really how you feel about the field.
So they were like, they kept saying during the broadcast, like, well, it was a rainy couple of days here in San Diego. And I get Southern California doesn't get a ton of rain, but like, it's also that time of the year, and these things, like none of these like weather things that happened the past couple of weeks weren't like complete, like they were predicted. So it's insane to, I mean, you have this game, you know about it for so long, you have this buildup, and then like it to have the field be garbage right before the game, especially on just one half of the field too, because it seemed like it was the middle of the field where the
hash marks.
Yeah. Like right inside, like the, probably inside like the 30 to like the 15. It was just, I'm blown away that nobody got hurt. I was saying, I thought they should have canceled the game. It's incredible. Especially like we talked about, Zach just said just a moment ago, these games don't mean anything. And then to have football is already a dangerous game, and to have a dangerous playing surface. And it's like, it's crazy. Like, so what, we're playing football games in baseball stadiums. Like, why don't we just keep it up? Let's try a hockey rink. Let's play on the ice. Moda Center. We'll have a small field and we're going to play 11-on-11 on a basketball court. Like, it's fucking stupid. Zach?
So, yep, Zach, go ahead.
Man, how do I top that? I just... We want to reward these kids and we want to hold them up for, you know, staying with the team and not opting out, not transferring, playing these games when, like Shane said, they in the grand scheme of things, they don't mean that much. And then we go put them on a surface that, you know, is ripe for injuries. And we say, hey, yeah, this, I know you're playing more than you know, were expected to. And well, we're going to have you on this where, you know, there's a good chance that someone might, you know, catch a corner and twist a knee or something and get actually significantly hurt. And it's just that just kind of stuck, you know, in my crawl. And like, it's like, man, these kids are really doing what we want them to do and sticking around for the postseason, playing in a game that's not in the college football playoff, not a New Year's Six bowl game, and, you know, giving the fans what they deserve to see. But then we're just having them play on this, you know, terrible, terrible injury riddled surface. And yeah, like Shane said, I can't believe that there was not any significant injuries that we saw on the field last night. It was just, I was ready to see it at every play on that side of the field.
Play football on natural grass in football stadiums. It's not that difficult, people. It's really not that difficult. I mean, there's a reason. I mean, not to bring in like, you know, like European soccer angle into this or whatever, but they refuse to play on turf. I mean, obviously the ball travels a little bit differently too, but they know the injury risk that even just having turf brings into this. So now you're talking about taking natural grass, putting it over a baseball stadium and trying to just, I mean, shout out to the groundskeepers. I know, I mean, those, I'm sure those guys and ladies did the absolute best they could, you know, and given the circumstances that they were, the cards that they were dealt, don't want to, you know, get down on anybody for their career or something of that nature. But my goodness, like this poor decisions made from the top for sure. I mean, we need to find a better place to, I mean, I was actually feeling the exact opposite of you, Zach. I was sitting there last night on my couch being like, gosh, dang it. We should have gone to this game. We should have just driven down. It would have been so fun. Like, oh my gosh, what a great experience. San Diego's beautiful. Like, why not? Dang it. But yeah, that it's, I love the angles that you guys took on that, especially Zach. I mean, taking that just, you know, we're, these kids are doing exactly what we ask them to do and we're putting them in an unsafe situation. That sucks. That sucks. So again, thank goodness nobody got hurt. Let's go ahead and move forward here on the good old rundown. Unless you could do anything else you guys want to get to on the good old field conditions. Oh, go ahead, Shane.
I'm pretty sure North Carolina missed that field goal in the first half because they were kicking off that lumpy fucking shit. Like that that was when the camera zoomed in on it. And I was really like, what is it? Looks like when you have like a rug on the ground and it gets like bunched up and there's just like all those lumps in it and stuff. And it looked like when he went to like put the ball down and hold it, that it was like kind of on one of those lumps. And it was like, and I don't think they would have even done anything had Twitter not gone on fire about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not good. Again, football stadiums, grass. These are the things that should be going on. Some guys really stepped up in this game. In particular, we already talked a little bit about Bo and Bucky. On the defensive side, I think two players in that front seven in particular really, really impressed me. Bassa and Funa, just it seemed like every play, 33 and 18 were involved. I mean, 18 looked like he was getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Zach, look like you've got somebody else you want to throw in there. Who do you got?
Those were not the two that I would have said.
Oh,
I
mean, Funa, okay.
Definitely, but I would have said Keith Brown over Bassa.
Oh yeah, Brown, I mean, played, really, played well.
Really well, but I think Brown had maybe the best game of his career. I mean, he tied Funa for the team high with 7 tackles. He had, let me see, yeah, 1 quarterback hit, 4 solo tackles. I mean, I love to see after the game in like the celebration, you looked at, you know, the sea of like white jerseys and everything, and then there's Keith Brown with his jersey pretty much green because he had just been
in it was the field color
all over the field so much, and it's like that was, he was just all over. I had a great time watching him, and it was really encouraging because, you know, part of these games is we want to see who's going to step up and make a case to be a starter and a big contributor next year. And, you know, Keith Brown, absolutely one of those. Mace Funa announced after the game that he's coming back for next season. Seemed to catch Dan Lanning by surprise when saying that in the post-game press conference. Dan was like, oh, hell yeah. yeah, which was an awesome moment right there. But those are two guys. And like you said, with Jeffrey Bassa too, I think 3 potentially big pieces in the linebacking core. You get the transfer Justin Jacobs in from Iowa as well. I think the Ducks have some real pieces that they can go to in that front 7, which was, you know, somewhat of a concern after it was announced that Noah Sewell was going to the NFL draft. Justin Flo, whatever you think of him transferring, you know, that was definitely a depth issue potentially going forward. But we had some guys really step up there last night.
We'll get to Justin Flo here in a little bit here later on in the podcast. Casey Rogers, I thought also played really well on the actual line itself. Shane, did you have anybody else that you wanted to throw some roses towards?
Casey Rogers was one. I think that he time and time again has made a lot of plays that don't show up in the stat sheet. He gets such good push on the interior and the line there, and it seems like they always kind of run away from him. So he has yet to have like that big statistical game. But I also want to give a shout out to Tri-Quez Bridges, somebody that we were pretty critical of this entire season. I thought, Justin, you said it really well in our text thread that he's probably made the biggest improvement this year. And seeing him kind of step up as CB1 in that game with Gonzo out going into the draft, I was curious to see how he was going to take on that role and take on that challenge. And I thought he stepped up, made a couple really good plays in coverage, and made a couple really good tackles. That cornerback blitz where he came in and caught the running back on that left side, that was amazing. And just those were all the plays that I feel like that's why we were critical, is that we knew that this was a possibility for his potential. And not seeing it earlier in the year, it was just kind of one of those road bumps in his career.
I had this kid when I coached high school water polo that was just an insane like aqua athlete. Like you just put them in the water and they can move really well. You know what I mean? They look really natural in the water. They're super fast swimming, first couple, all that kind of stuff, but they couldn't quite think through the game at first. So when you throw them in the game, they just kind of like splash around a lot and look like they're trying really hard, but not really make it like the correct plays and constantly out of position, constantly hurting the team. And then about halfway through the season near the end, it just all clicked and it just, they were all of a sudden playing with this like downhill aggression, you know, where like, oh, I can actually harness this. Oh, I can make this move to throw them off. And then it just, they were able to think through the game. And that's what I saw from Bridges last night. It just looked like a light bulb went on and he's like, oh, I finally understand all the X's and O's. Now I can just unleash my athleticism and just play like an angry hyena out there on the football field and just go out. I mean, that play, that corner blitz, I mean, that was incredibly impressive. I don't remember seeing an Oregon cornerback tackle with that kind of just pure anger before. I mean, that's the first time live in a Duck football game that I've stopped the game and rewound a play in a really, really long time. That was just incredibly impressive. And his ceiling is incredibly high. I mean, on that frame, he's learning how to use his hands much better in coverage now. Use that length, got away with a couple, you know, little inside holds, but that's also part of being a cornerback is that craftiness.
That's how they were calling it too.
Yeah. And learning when they're calling it, learning when they're not, learning what you can kind of get away with. I mean, I have a blasphemous name kind of jumping around here in the back of my head of hyperbole of who I want to compare him to, but I'm not going to say that yet. I'm going to hold on to that one. Former Stanford Cardinal. That might make it a little bit easier for you guys.
Oh, wow. Sherman.
Yeah. He was that impressive last night, man. And he was talking too. He was not afraid to run his mouth out there. So that was really, really fun to watch. On the offensive side, go ahead. You have something else there?
Real quick before we leave the defense, just shout out to Brandon Dorlus.
Yes.
I was kind of shocked that he played in this game. He still has not declared whether he's coming back next year or not. I don't have any inside information on this. I don't think he will. He seemed like whether it was him or Noah that came back, I thought it'd be Noah and not Dorlus. But
yeah, same.
Dorlus played in this game. He had 5 tackles. He had half a tackle for loss, a nice pass breakup too, where he kind of just like hid behind the offensive line and just popped up right after the
DN spy or whatever.
The large man to be hiding.
Yeah,
exactly. But it was like after the play, he looked kind of like pissed at himself that he didn't intercept the ball too. Like, yeah, I kind of love that. That's your expectation, but he didn't have to play in this game. He's one of those guys that if he opted out, no one would have blamed him at all, because you know he's got an NFL future ahead of him, and he played really well. So I love to see that.
There was a couple plays though where he definitely made a couple business decisions, and so it was interesting. He kind of played like a guy with one foot in, one foot out, who just wanted to be in the bowl game, because I was like, oh, Dorlus is like starting, so I'm like, he's coming back. Mm-hmm. And there was a play where like I don't know who made the tackle, but there's a little bit of a scrum like near the line of scrimmage, and he just stopped and like, nah. And I was like, okay, maybe he's not coming back.
Funny Twitter moment on that almost just about an interception that Bridges had in the end zone, where he looked like he got an OPI. I don't know if you guys saw Verone McKinley tweeted right at him and said, "That's push-ups." Love that. I love you know, former Ducks, you know, coming back and talking. And I also want to know, how many push-ups? Like, is this like a DB rule? Like, if you drop a possible interception, you have like 100 push-ups or something? I'm curious. I want to know more. So Verone McKinley, I know you're listening. Just go, let's jump on the podcast and tell us a little bit about this this creed that you guys have.
And speaking of former Ducks, how awesome was it to see Herbert down on the sideline?
He looked like he was having so much fun, too.
Just like, I love this guy.
Oh, my gosh. Again, I don't know if this is just because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I cannot see him and not think about Anakin Skywalker, though. Yeah, like, they are just, like 100%. Like, so I'm just waiting for Herbert to enter his Darth Vader phase. And that'll probably happen when they get Sean Payton as their head coach next year. That'll be awesome. Very, very interesting. Okay, I do want to give a couple more flowers to a couple guys on the offensive side of the ball. Fergie and Franklin really, really stepped up in that receiving game. I was kind of surprised how much they missed Matavau, and in particular in blocking and things of that nature. I mean, we saw in the one, I think it was a big third down where, God love him, Patrick Herbert tried, but just couldn't get that block. Yeah, just whiffed 100%. And those things happen. But I didn't realize how integral he was in that blocking scheme in particular, just with his little bit of a bigger frame to get in there and beat it up. So that was really great to see Fergie step up. And you guys already mentioned Franklin's incredible hands. He literally reminded me of the kid. I think I tweeted it out, the kid from Little Giants. It gets like the stickum all over him. And just like the way he caught that ball, it looked exactly like that. Yeah, exactly.
And the fact that, I mean, what impressed me the most about Franklin is that he impacted this game so much, despite not really putting up a ton of stats. I mean, he had 5 catches for 24 yards and that touchdown. But, you know, he had 2 of the biggest defensive pass interferences called of the game when they were targeting him downfield. And it was like one of those Joe Flacco things, really. I mean, you take deep shots, something good is usually going to happen because either your receiver catches it or you're going to get a defensive pass interference. So I just love that even when he doesn't have a huge statistical game, his fingerprints were all over this one because, you know, he attracts so much attention from the defense and, you know, he helps make that offense operate how it should.
I'm glad you mentioned the pass interference thing. That's like that NFL wide receiver stuff that we haven't really gotten out of these kids here at Oregon the past couple of years to create that separation. And, you know, to, you know, give an opportunity for the deep ball, recognize that corner isn't turning around and you jump right into his fucking face as the ball is coming in.
And the ball was underthrown.
Whatever. Part of it. It's like Zach said, that's the Joe Flacco thing. How many of those?
Like two was a good quarterback.
Yeah. How many of those balls are actually catchable?
It's the Andy Dalton, the AJ Green. You know, it's just, AJ's down there somewhere. He's either going to catch it or he's going to draw me a PI. So I'll just throw it up there.
Yeah. I mean, Jamar Chase, he does it all the time. Justin Jefferson, the truly great, you know, modern wide receivers are trained to do that kind of thing.
Michael Thomas was one of the best at it. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
OBJ, he does it all the time. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So it was just cool to see when Troy Franklin did it that second time. I was like, We got one of the guys that can do this. That's why I was like half joking when I texted you guys. I was like, 2 drawn PIs? Is this the greatest wide receiver in the history of Oregon? Like, to just recognize these situations. Like, I can impact the game without even catching the ball. Like, let me just make you make the play. And if you don't, it's going to be positive for us.
And on both of those, he almost caught the ball.
He almost caught them both.
Yeah, exactly. The ball. It was like, wow. Yeah, it was just so impressive.
I think it's because early on in the season, I called him chicken legs, but Miga always calls him tiny legs whenever he makes a play out there on the field. It's like that does worry him just like injury wise, just a little, just concerns me just a little bit, but playing really well, really, really fun to watch him and the rest of this wide receiver core next year. Very, very exciting stuff. All right. Yeah. Hey, Shane, go ahead.
Before we get off, it should be mentioned that Chris Hudson made, you know, a really good potential game-winning touchdown catch that was called back. Was that holding or something like that?
Illegal man downfield.
What a throw by Bo, too. I mean, that was a Herbert-esque, like, on a dime to the back shoulder. That was beautiful.
And I also think that he had a better game than the stat sheet would show as well. And I think he's another guy who's kind of been overlooked of the season just because it just didn't really click. You know, they really tried to get him going. And it seemed like past couple of games at the end of the season here, it started to, you know, it started to get going a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm making motions at them without being able to say what I want to say on the podcast, but we're going to keep that going.
We're going to go and just keep it moving.
Can I talk about Bucky Irving?
Yes, please.
This is the part of the podcast where I can talk about
Bucky Irving. Yes, wax Holy poetic crap. About Bucky Irving, please.
This guy, man, he is just so much fun. I don't know that his career at Oregon, when all is said and done, is going to look as good as it could, because there's so much depth and there are so many mouths to feed in the running back room in Eugene. But man, if you gave him 20 to 25 carries a game, it would be unprecedented what we see from him. I mean, he had 149 yards and 2 touchdowns on 13 carries last night. That's 11 and a half yards per carry, which is just saying, give me the ball, I will get us a first down and potentially more. We've talked a ton about him this year. Just his mix of explosive ability and quick cuts and physicality and never going down with the first contact. It's just, I tweeted last night after in the first quarter, it's like, I didn't realize how much I missed watching Bucky Irving run until this, like, what, 3-4 weeks off, because it's so much fun to see what he can do with the ball. And, you know, there's been a ton of great running backs to come through Eugene over the past 2-3 decades. And I think that, you know, he's got 2 years of eligibility left. I don't know if he'll take both or if he'll just play next year and then be gone. But if he sticks around for those 2 years and has a 3-year career at Oregon, he can be like an Ontario Smith who transferred to Oregon and, you know, had a great career and end up somewhere on the all-time rushing list for the Ducks. So the ceiling is so high for him. I can't wait to see what he does in year 2 and potentially year 3 with the Ducks.
Why do you only get 13 carries though?
Yeah, I think it's just a continued mix, you know, trying to get Noah in there, trying to get Jordan James in there. I think it's where does keeping him fresh cross over into not using him enough, right? And I think that there is a balance there. But I think my favorite thing I saw from Bucky last night is after he had that really long run for a touchdown, literally turned and sprinted back to the bench and just sat down and just let his teammates just like go crazy around him. And that just like his smile on his face. And Bucky, don't worry, we'll always call you Bucky here. We're never going to use that other stupid name that other fan base used for you. I can't imagine how that made him feel in Minnesota. Bucko. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, call me my freaking name, man. Like, good gracious.
Do that story about them not wanting to call him the mascot for the arrival school. I'm like,
that doesn't sound
like a real story.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Also,
they're lost.
One more
game.
Thing on him. He had, maybe the blitz pickup of the game on the game-winning touchdown.
Thank you for calling that out. Yes.
It's just incredible that he's at this size able to stand in there and just take on a blitzing linebacker and give Bo the time to throw and make the game-winning play. It's just, I love Bucky Irving so much.
I think that was the second best block of the game. Right behind Cam McCormick getting a split pickup basically by throwing another North Carolina player into the other one. Man,
on Bucky's touchdown run.
Yeah, on his long touchdown run. And is he, I know he got a dislocated finger. I don't know that if we saw so him gross. That much more last of the game. Dude, those are terrible. Those hurt so bad. Like, oh my gosh.
I loved it. On Twitter, there was, reporters were saying like, oh, looks like McCormick's down with a hand injury. We'll see what happens. And his mom quote tweeted one of them, said it's just a dislocated finger, like you guys are blowing this way out of proportion. I'm like, just like if one of us dislocated our finger, we'd be out for like a month.
Can't type, man, I'm on the injured list, sorry. Can't pod.
Honestly, can't that would be a hand. Huge issue in my life.
No, it's so painful too, especially I don't know which it, where if it happened at like the upper like knuckle or at the joint, but either way it's a terrible feeling. I take it neither of you guys have ever done it before, but yeah, it's a terrible.
I haven't, dude.
Oh, it's terrible. Anyway, all right. Describe this win, this holiday football, this holiday bowl win, and what it means for Oregon moving forward in one word.
I can go first.
Yeah, please go.
Yeah, go ahead, Shane.
Fun.
Hey.
This was just a fun win. Yep. I don't think it really means too much. I don't think it means a lot about the trajectory of North Carolina or Oregon, honestly. But I think, you know, with how we described our feelings on bowl season last week, this was an ideal game for me. Nobody got hurt. It was fun. Went down to the wire. Whole thing was exciting. Both teams played well. Exciting big plays. I learned a couple rules That was fun. You know, I didn't know you couldn't intentionally kick the ball to yourself on defense. Why that's a rule, I'll never be able to understand.
Well, the fact that you could be in the end zone while downing a punt on the 1 yard line.
Yeah. I guess that's an NFL rule. Yeah. Where it's like, it's so different too, in college and NFL, because I was screaming about that too. I was like, that's a touchback. What the fuck? I'll go next. I'll go next.
Go ahead.
I'd call it inspiring. I would look at it a little bit differently, Shane. I think this does mean something. I mean, for Dan Lanning and that coaching staff to take a group of kids that, like you said, for just an exhibition game, and to get them to care enough about it to go out there and to get a guy like Dorless out there to play, to get a guy like Funa to play in the game and then decide to come back to the Ducks, to get a guy like Bo Nix, you know, to go out there and play hobbled. I mean, there's something going on behind the scenes where these kids believe that they're playing for something bigger than themselves. And I think that that's really important to kind of build that culture. And I think that losing a game like this in your first season, especially after the way things kind of ended, could have just planted some doubt in that locker room. And, you know, when that starts to happen, that can become a really quick, you know, a virus that can grow really quickly. So for that coaching staff to go out there and prove it, and for Bo Nix too, to go out there and kind of solidify himself. And I mean, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but I mean, he's got some honors coming his way also, just for that performance in particular on that last drive. I think it's easy to say that, yeah, it's an exhibition game. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Nobody was playing all that hard. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But a win is a win. And getting to 10 wins, getting to double digits, getting those fuzzy feelings, you know, getting out of San Diego, getting the momentum rolling forward. And that on top of some of these other massive wins that we've had off the field in the program, I think just keeps that momentum ball rolling in the right direction. So for me, this was an inspiring game. What do you got, Zach?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the exact same boat as you. I was going to say encouraging. Over the past 12 hours, I've kind of been like debating myself, being like, does this game matter? Does this mean anything? Does it not matter? Like, what's the point of all this? And yeah, I think in the end, like it does matter. It's not huge. Like, it's not like a program altering win or anything, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of positives you can take from it. There's also a lot of negatives you can take from it too. We can talk a lot about the things that the Ducks still need to work on going into 2023, particularly on defense and special teams. But yeah, in the end, I think this was a really good cap to the 2022 season, and gives you a really good feeling, like Justin was saying, going into that offseason and being able to build off this and have all of those players. I mean, it's a lot easier to go into offseason workouts when the last memory you have is winning a bowl game on a last second touchdown, you know, rather than coming home with another loss. You're what, third in the last four games? Is that what it was? So yeah, I think that in the end, this doesn't change a whole lot, like Shane was saying, but it's something. It's a positive step in the right direction, and it's a great way to end Lanning's first season with the Ducks.
I'm also just happy we made Mac Brown sad.
I might argue a really good practice would mean just as much, but that's just that.
And this is why we're such good podcast, because we see things so differently. So yeah, I think there's something to be said for that for sure. But just getting that dub, you know, getting a dub is a dub. And yeah, if nothing else, it quiets Twitter down for a little bit and lets mm-hmm. everybody just take a CBD hit and just kind of chill out just a little bit. So, all right,
well,
let's
kind of
right. Yeah. Kind of chill out just for a second. Let's keep it moving. We do have a hard out today, so we want to keep this podcast on the rails. Season grades. I mean, you can go back and listen to our podcast. I think we had a couple, two really good preseason podcasts in particular, where all of us were kind of in the same boat. We had no idea what to expect from this Oregon team. We had no idea what we didn't know what the offense was going to look like, you know, what the defense was going to look like. And just for so much unknown going into the season, and to end with 10 wins and with a bowl victory, I'm just curious if we're giving this like a, you know, A to F. Classic, you know, good old rudimentary scale here. Where does this season fall for you guys when you take into consideration those expectations we had going into the preseason?
I'd probably go with a solid B. I mean, losing to the rival teams, of course, you know, is painful, but this is also a first year head coach. And I think that's one thing that, you know, gets talked about, but I don't think really gets that the importance of that, I don't know if it is really thought of in the right light. That have this, you know, all of these guys stepping into these new roles and this new exciting program in Oregon, where probably a lot of these coaches have never even been. And yeah, I think to come out and, you know, score a lot of points, have a player in the Heisman conversation, and then have, you know, I think we're all fairly optimistic of what next year is going to look like. And if you would told me that, even though we lost to Georgia, Oregon State, and Washington, that we would still be, you know, this optimistic going forward, I think that it's, you know, obviously there's a lot to improve on, but I do think that a lot of things were accomplished this year. And just those negatives, as big as they are, they have to kind of be put into perspective.
Yeah, I think that's solid. What do you got, Zach?
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty accurate. I wrote down the actual what my grades were for like each position group on offense and defense, and it's a really good mix of, you know, there's some A's and some B's, and there's some C's, and you know, there's one D on there for me. But you know, it's
like my high school report card.
I don't want to say that's what it is.
What position group for me? What position? Well, I don't want to step on any of your articles, but
no, what position group got the D? Special teams.
Yes,
they were terrible outside of Camden Lewis, who was really good, but I thought that they were not very good. And mostly, I mean, I don't have any A's on the defense. I've got four A's on the offense. So that kind of tells you what the season was like for Oregon. But if you look from a grand scheme of things, that feels kind of accurate, because, you know, the on-field product was not always great. I think if you were to say just the on-field product, it's probably a C plus, sometimes a B minus to a B, but then you look at the off field, you look at the recruiting, you look at the coaching, you look at the coaching hires. I think that's probably an A or an A minus. We've got multiple coaches now that have already been hired after 1 year to go do better positions elsewhere. And I think we all feel very confident in what Dan Lanning is doing and building in Eugene. So I think that the outlook for this program is really positive. And yeah, I think a B to a B plus would be what I would say for the season.
So we're going to finish in the top 10 or top 15. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be a top 15 finish. It's a 10 win season. We have a quarterback that has shown he is more than capable of elevating not only his play in big moments, but also elevating the team around him and making players around him better. We have a head coach, first year head coach, that showed that he has some things to learn. Certainly, you know, showed that he has some improvements to be made, but a head coach that took accountability for every single one of those mistakes. And not once this season did we have a subtweet type, you know, comment from him. He's been upfront.
We got a cigar tweet.
Yeah, we got a beautiful. I mean, that is. I want to take a picture of that and just put up on my wall. That is just that makes me so happy. Just like that coach feeling. Like I just that it's so good. This is. Man, if you would have told Duck fans in like 1991. Like, oh yeah, you're going to have a top 15 season. You're going to have 10 wins. You're going to have a Holiday Bowl win. You're going to have a quarterback coming back that's a potential Heisman candidate. You're going to have a, you know, first team all Pac-12 running back coming back. You got a bunch of 4 and 5 stars running around on the defense that you've beat out teams like Ohio State and Alabama to bring into your program. That Duck fan's head would have exploded, because this program, again, has come so far so quickly. And I mean, even with all of that said, I'm going to go B plus. I really wanted to give an A minus for this team, but I think that there were just enough opportunities that weren't capitalized on to drop it down just a little bit more. I would love to see this season played with injuries turned off. You know what I mean? Just to see how things would have, you know, projected a little bit differently. But I think this is an incredibly impressive season, you know, to bring in a transfer quarterback, somebody that I was wrong. I was low on Bo Nix. I was really low on Bo Nix, and he has gone out there and he has really, you know, proven me wrong to the point where, you know, I'm going to throw out a nomination for him later on in this podcast. But it's really impressive. I think it's really impressive for all the unknowns that we had at the beginning of the season to come out and still have 10 wins. Losing to the Beavers and Huskies sucks. So, I mean, I think that if those two losses were to other teams, I think I might have been more willing to maybe jump it up into an A type of a season too. But I think a solid B plus is where this one falls for me.
it's just kind of amazing, like, how much expectations have changed.
Oh my God. You know,
actually, I mean, I guess decade and a half, because 2012, we were, you know, fresh off the World Bowl win. And, well, actually, we were on the World Bowl in 12. Yeah, it's always confusing what
the middle of the year season was,
because it's actually, but yeah, they were at the peak of the powers with Chip Kelly or just getting to be in that. So maybe a decade and a half ago, we would have looked at this and been like, are you crazy? You're calling this type of season a B plus?
Well, look at, I mean, you tweeted out right before the game that hype video with Joey and, you know, mm-hmm. the supporting cast Garrett there. And
TJ, yeah.
And I mean, like, when we look back at like the Joey Harrington era, like going to the Holiday Bowl and playing, like, was it Oklahoma State or whatever?
Texas.
I knew it was white and orange team. Like, you know, it was this huge accomplishment. And now it's looked at as a disappointment, which is, yeah, it speaks volumes to the program. I mean, obviously Nike getting more and more involved, like, that didn't hurt things.
Just have to say, I mean, I kind of talked about this a little bit, you know, and hoping Noah would come back. But that Joey Harrington team, the year after they won the Holiday Bowl, brought a lot of people back and had a really pretty special season the next year. So just, I think a lot of seeds have been planted, you know, and can this coaching staff cultivate those seeds, water those seeds, and to get them to grow into beautiful flowers. We'll see what happens. All right, let's go ahead. And this is probably the part of the podcast I've been most excited about. Let's talk about our draft, you guys. One of our previous, I think it was episode like 126, something like that. We did our players. We are excited about draft as we kind of got started.
Stock draft.
Yeah, I feel weird about calling it a stock draft, calling human beings stocks. I don't know. It's just weird. But yeah, stock draft. We can call it that.
You call it what you want.
Call it what you want to call it. Shane, I want to start with you here as we recap our drafts here. I'll just run through here real quick. Won't take here too long. Justin Flo, first overall. Noah Sewell, Chris Hudson, Christian Gonzalez, Bo Nix, Seven McGee, Jeffrey Bassa. What's up, Zach?
Should we name it? Should we do it by team?
Do you have it? I mean, I don't have it split up by team. Okay, you do. Team. Yeah, go ahead and read it off. Read it off by team, real quick.
I liked how Justin's doing it more.
Shane's team, first overall pick, Justin Flo, Seven McGee, Jeffrey Bassa, Byron Cardwell.
Whoops.
Three of those four are currently no longer with the program.
The Shane curse, man.
At the
man.
Time, I actually liked your team probably the best. JD's team, Noah Sewell, Bo Nix, DJ Johnson, Terrence Ferguson. It's a pretty good team. That's actually a really good team. My team, Chris Hudson, Christian Gonzalez, Bucky Irving, and Josh Connerly.
Solid. Super solid.
It's good. One really good pick. Two actually really good picks.
Super duper solid.
Decent.
I think, again, that first overall pick just epitomizes the what the fuck of the season. Like, we didn't know, you know, going into it what things were going to look like. So as you look at those teams, Shane, how you feeling?
It's fucking crazy that, I mean, the Justin Flo pick, you know, whatever. We didn't know much about him, the injuries and everything like that. And, you know, I obviously bet on the high ceiling there, and the low floor kind of bit me in the ass. The one that just I can't believe is, like, Byron Cardwell is, like, one of the top rushers in the Pac-12. And then doesn't even really – did he play? Did he get a – was he on the field at all this year?
He played. First couple games played, yeah.
Yeah. He had a handful of snaps.
Yeah, I mean, it was so long ago, I can't remember. And then it was, you know, he was obviously inactive for the last, 12 weeks of the season or whatever. And now he's at a Cal of all places. Mm-hmm. That's the one that just really surprised me the most. But I if I'm going to hang my hat on anything, I still love the Jeff Bassa pick. It's just a player mm-hmm. I just really love watching. Just a linebacker at that size with that skill set. So I'm going to focus on the positives here. And yeah, and just he was everything that I hoped he was going to be this year. He didn't really fix as much of the problems in the passing game, but as we learned, you know, with the season going on, that there was no individual player that was going to fix the passing game. I mean, Christian Gonzalez is, you know, a potential top 10 NFL pick, and they were still one of the worst secondaries in the country conference. I don't know. It's kind of hard to pull it out too far, but yeah. And then Seven McGee, it's, you know, I was taking a shot in the dark on that one, position change. And, you know, it was, there was a lot of potential there. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd love to. I mean, we were super high on Seven. I thought he was going to be that, you know, slot receiver, you know, 5 yard catches, 10 yards of yak, you know, kind of player. And it just didn't, that role just never materialized for him.
It's like, knowing what we knew then at the time we did this exercise, your team was really good.
Yeah.
You had four really good players on there. And it's like, I thought you probably won the draft when we did it. And it's just like, it's crazy how it changed over the past 4 months, because that, yeah, it looks nothing like it did then.
I have this amazing knack for hitching my wagon to these people that, like, it's not like they become failures. They just don't stay in Eugene.
Yeah, they just leave.
Yeah, and then they have success in other places. So it's like, oh, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, Kylie Watson's playing well. Frank Kepnong's playing well. Yeah, it's the Shane curse well. Lives,
Sydney
man.
Parrish, yeah, Sydney Parrish fucking killing it in Indiana.
And she looks like she's having a lot more fun in Indiana, too. She is. I don't know. And she looks like Kylie Watson, too. Yeah, absolutely. So good for players to find places where they can not only, you know, compete at the highest level, but also be happy in life. And with that said, shout out Aaron Boley. I hope Aaron Boley is out there just living life to the fullest, just absolutely crushing it. I love my team. I mean, I love my team. I loved it when we came out of the draft. The Bo Nix pick was just an absolute troll pick on my part that just worked out beautifully. But I think we need to kind of call out. I mean, we've got like an Adam Schefter basically, you know, in the draft pool here with us. And so for him to go out and get Bucky Irving and for him to go out and get Christian Gonzalez, the two guys, the transfers coming to the, I mean, if you would have gotten Bo Nix, you would have had like the all transfer squad just with all that inside knowledge. But yeah, Zach, how are you feeling about your squad?
I feel like I blew my first overall pick, which is unfortunate because I don't want to say that about Chris Hudson, but it's like, how is he the number three overall pick in the draft? There was just so many better players on the board. It's just
crazy. Yeah, it was a little surprising at the time, but again, you had that inside knowledge. Yeah. You had some good vibes on it. So
I thought it was gonna be really good. I feel like if we made this like a 2 to 3 year exercise, I would have won. But like, because if I can take Bucky Irving and Josh Connerly forward to next year, I bought them at such a low stock price.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think Josh Connerly's going to be like the starting left tackle next year. And I already talked about Bucky earlier. It's just like, I think I got in at a really great price on them, but unfortunately this I think is a 1 year exercise and we'll redo it again next fall.
Well, if we extend the exercise to next year, how about if you own the stock of that player, you automatically get dibs on them, so it'll like maybe you get them at, you know, like the pick you got them at last year, but you nobody Ooh. Else has a chance to take them.
So I think this Ooh. Is what we do. I think next year we add 2 rounds, we go 6 rounds, okay. And we allow ourselves, I mean, we'd still pick 4 players because I think we allow ourselves to keep 2 people from this year's draft and roll it over to next year.
I don't even have the option to keep 2 people.
Well, you can draft a whole new 6 too, but I think you have the option to keep 2 at their stock prices or drop them. Yeah, I think that's fun.
I think that's
a good call. I mean, I'm really excited to see again, Flo and DJ, or excuse me, Sewell and DJ, you know, just in the NFL and just how their careers are going to move forward. That's going to be really fun to watch. I think they're both second, third, fourth round picks. Maybe DJ falls to that fourth round, but I think NFL guys are going to get caught up in his size and skill, tangible combination. I think he'll jump up the boards a little bit. Same with Noah when they start running him through those combine drills. Okay, anything else you guys want to talk about here with the stock draft, or shall we keep it pushing? All right, a little bit of news here. Matt Powledge, Oregon co-DC and safety coach, is on his way to Baylor. This is basically an Austin Novosad for Matt Powledge trade. There may be some details to be worked out later. Might be a washing machine sent one direction or the other. We're not sure. But I think that's a trade that I would make every day, including Sundays. Good for Matt Powledge. You know, Zach, you were talking before the podcast, actually came here from Baylor, was the safety coach at Baylor, now going back to be the defensive coordinator at Baylor. So good for him making his way up the coaching ladder. But anything else you want to kind of touch on this here, Zach?
It's just another good example of, you know, kind of a coaching incubator that we've seen in Eugene. And that's definitely continuing with Dan Lanning. I mean, Kenny Dillingham had a great year as a coordinator when got his dream job at Arizona State. Powledge came from Baylor, has, you know, strong ties to Texas, has a really good year as a co-DC and a safeties coach. I mean, a lot of people are really in on him as a coach. I've heard some great things, and that if the DC job at Oregon were to open up for whatever reason, that he would be a strong candidate for that too. So, or would have been before taking this job, but he goes back to Baylor, which is great to see. So, another coaching availability for the Ducks, and I'm sure that we will see it get filled in the next, few weeks to a month.
Think we can lure Ed Reed away from Bethune-Cookman to come be our safety coach? Yeah. That'd be pretty amazing.
That'd be the coolest hire I've ever seen.
I'd be so happy. Shane, anything to add?
Are we reaching the era of just like random former players getting coaching jobs? Did Deion Sanders kind of like spark it?
I mean, I hope more players jump into the coaching game. I think it's
Saturday.
Oh, goodness gracious. Goodness great, Zach, you just got to go out there and do that. Well, Jeff Saturday will have a great time coaching Derek Carr next year as the yes. Colts starting quarterback. I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing when your assistant coaches are desired. It's a good thing when you have head coaches that are moving up the ladder and that continue to spread your coaching tree, around the country. So good for him. Hope things work out there. I never want good things for Baylor, but I want good things for Matt Powledge. So good for him.
I'm just confused going forward. Is Matt Powledge part of the Dan Lanning coaching tree, or is he the Dave Aranda coaching tree?
Interesting.
Who gets state claim
who claims him?
I think it's Dave Aranda because he had him for longer and now has him again.
Has him back.
In like a more prominent position too.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, we'll still claim him as a former Oregon coach, but part of the Lanning coaching tree. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. We are just about here at the end of the podcast. Couple things here we want to get to, gentlemen. Signing day was such a blur. I just want to get kind of if you guys had any, lingering thoughts or lingering comments that you wanted to get off your chest about signing day. It was just such a beautiful day to be an Oregon Duck football fan. The sense of euphoria was just over the program. I mean, a couple losses, would have been great to bring in one or two more five stars, missed out on a couple big swings. But I think overall, the class is so strong. And it's a class that I think brings a lot of strengths that this coaching staff can really work with and mold. I guess that's kind of just my general feelings on it. Shane, you got anything?
Beat the hell out of Washington in the recruiting game this year. So that was good to see.
We love it.
I was a little curious about how the quote unquote disappointment season was going to kind of affect recruiting. And we were all, I think, a little bullish on the fact that it was still going to be a good recruiting class. And the fact that it was just solidified those feelings. And that's good. And, as much as these other schools might catch up on the field in the short term, it seems like that they're still extending it in the long term.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I would say that if we could just like collectively get a Men in Black pen and like erase the whole Peyton Bowen thing from Duck fans' memory, then Wednesday and Thursday would have been so much more fun because like, yes, there was great signings. It was an awesome day, but like that did kind of put a damper on things. Cause like, oh, we got this guy and we got our hopes up and then came crashing down, but take that away. And it's still an incredible signing period for the Ducks. And going forward, this signing class is not over. It got announced this morning that five-star athlete Nicholas Harbor, who's a 6'5", 225-pounder who plays D-end and tight end and runs a 10.28 100-meter dash at that size, which is just insane. He has set up an official visit to Eugene for sometime in January. So, like, the Ducks are going after him, and they're potentially getting five-star tight end Deuce Robinson for an official visit in January.
Wait. Did you just, how big is he? 6'5", 200 what?
6'5", 225. Go what look the up the fuck? Video. 6'5", 225, runs at 10.28 100 meters.
Are both those guys 2023 class?
Yes, they are this class.
Oh my God.
Wow.
My brain is just broken.
It's insane. This is a guy who had like Field Yates tweeting about him earlier in the year. Because like rushing or his like 100 meter dash video came out and we're like, are you kidding me? This guy's that size and runs that fast.
That is not normal.
That's crazy.
So Ducks finish. It looks like I pull up good old duckswire.com here. What a great website. Ducks finished 10th in the national rankings, right behind the Florida Gators. And Shane, I'm going to give you one guess what team we came in right in front of.
Is it Tennessee?
It's Tennessee, that's baby. Fucking crazy.
That is wild.
They're always right around us.
Always happening.
Too funny. Too funny. All right. We have this little thing here at the Flock Pod called the Flock Pod Hall of Fame. And we haven't done the best job of curating it. We need to outsource it. We need to hire someone to like be our like a good museum curator. You know what I mean? We need who's the actress from like Ocean's 13 who's like a museum, like Julia Roberts. We need like a Julia Roberts to like come in and be like our curator here for the Flock Pod Hall of Fame. But I think there's a couple players that are deserving of nomination here, and we're going to do a big episode on this next week. But I just want to nominate a couple guys here, and I'm going to do it because Shane brought this up earlier in the season. I was the guy that was a wet blanket on him committing to the Ducks. But gentlemen, I would like to nominate Bo Nix to the Flock Pod Hall of Fame. Yep. I think it's time that drive. So again, I'm a huge geek. I mean, you guys can see the Zoom background here. I've got toys and shit like all over the place. This beautiful gauntlet right here, right before the Ducks started that drive, I ran in here and like a 12-year-old put a toy on my hand and sat on the couch. And I was like, all right, this is going to be our good luck charm. The gauntlet's going to get us there. I'm going to Thanos this shit and we're going to win this game. And Duck, and we did it. So, you know what I mean? I think Bo Nix to the Flock Pod Hall of Fame, and we'll vote on the actual induction next week. But I think him nominated is too pure. Makes too much sense. Do you guys have anybody else that you would like to nominate for the Flock Pod Hall of Fame?
I got a list of potential names here.
I like it.
And I mean, these are, you know, we're just going to throw these out there. Obviously, not all of these guys will get in. Noah Sewell being one. Yep. I think his time here, you know, we gave him a cool nickname and, you know, he became Wolverine. A fan favorite. Obviously, Bo Nix, we just talked about. Alex Forsythe.
Oh, that's a great one.
Staple in the Oregon program, really helped the changing of the guard between the coaching staffs and whatnot. Bennett Williams.
Ooh, okay. All right. I'm listening.
Then I got three more here. Cam McCormick.
Cam McCormick needs to be in. Yeah.
Just, you know what? Based off the fact, the 9-year thing.
Yeah. You know what? I'm prepared to do this right now. We're putting Cam McCormick in the Flock Pod Hall of Fame. Yeah.
I think we're all okay with that.
He's in. Yeah. Van McCormick is in.
And then the last two here, Mace Funa is, you know, maybe not there yet. Maybe we'll give him one more year. Some things happen, you know, but just a potential player. Mm-hmm. And then this one is more just for me, just a player that I just love watching. I know Duck Twitter gets very frustrated with him, but just the size and the mobility, Big Sal.
Oh yeah.
I think he really encapsulates a lot of like what we originally brought the Flock Pod Hall of Fame together for. Like, not the greatest player, but boy is he fun to watch.
I love that one. I love that nomination. All right, and we've got a couple. Go ahead, Zach.
This is more of a retroactive nomination. Because we were talking pre-pod, I can't believe this guy's not in the Flock Pod Hall of Fame. Get Justin Herbert in there.
He'll have to go through the official voting process, but yes.
And again,
I would just like to nominate Justin Herbert.
I was going through, because I do everything pen to paper, so I was going through old notebooks trying to find it, so it's a little bit harder to go through and get everything. Memory with this group has never been like our
not a strong
thing.
Suit. Not a strong suit.
We actually do a lot to inhibit our own memory. So, I mean, he may have been in already. Another player that you just mentioned a couple minutes ago, JD, that if isn't in, I think should be in retroactively, is Aaron Boley. Neither one of them are on the list. I'm going to put them on my paper list here, and then we'll. As this podcast goes on, the Flock Pod Hall of Fame will get a little bit more structured, and maybe we'll have a list of everybody involved. But yeah, we'll save that for a further episode. The members that we do have solidified in and whatnot, and who we're going to be getting in. But yeah, I mean, Justin Herbert, although he was a very controversial figurehead on this podcast for about 2 years,
would like to say I was not part of the podcast.
No, that's all me. I raised my hand, and it wasn't even really Shane. I won't throw Shane under the bus. It was me. I'm the problem. It was me.
Yeah, we had many, many debates over Justin Sherbert.
That was some of our best content, though. I mean, probably, I make no apologies. Yeah. I make no apologies. I think there were some things I said, and again, I'm justifying. But the crystal ball of it all can't be forgotten either.
That's true.
And the Marcus Arroyo. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That cannot be forgotten. All right, gentlemen, we have reached the end of the podcast. I don't know if I really have one for this week, but I think we need to get that last take off, that take that's just that little ember burning on your chest that you just got to fire it off. You can't let it sit there any longer. Zach looks pretty excited. I think I'm going to go to Zach first, and then we'll kind of go from there. Zach, what do you got, man?
So I've got a bone to pick.
Ooh,
I am not one to get outraged on the internet, but I found myself reading something on Twitter. I think it was yesterday, and I almost had to just like stop everything I was doing and be like, are you serious? And the guy that I have a bone to pick with is none other than Shane. I see that you were allotted 5 championships and you gave 0 to Oregon football, instead giving 2 to Oregon basketball, 2 to Oregon women's basketball, and 1 to the Blazers. What the hell are we doing? We run an Oregon-centric, largely football podcast. Well, and we're not giving a single championship
to the Ducks football team.
You got to give 2 to the men's team, 2 to the women's team, and I get the Blazers. That's fine. But I can't even get 1 for the football team. What are we doing? Please explain yourself.
See, this take might get me in a lot of trouble on the internet. I just think basketball is a far superior sport in so many ways. Honestly, here we go. I'll just say it. My dream scenario would be that Oregon becomes a basketball school. And this football nonsense and all this big money stuff could just be
I love this.
Yeah. No, like I look at like what like Duke has. I mean, I know they're like a private school, but even like some of these like Big East schools, and I'm like, if like the fan base was so gung ho about what Will Richardson was doing and not like Ty Thompson, it's such like a more productive use of our hot air in our bodies. But I understand that like, you know, football is the driving force. I guess I'll leave it at that. Well, I don't want to get in too much trouble.
A lot of it comes back to the fact that, I mean, Oregon is not a basketball state. It's just not. And it shocks me that it's not. It rains all winter here. Like, what else are the kids doing? Get in the gym and get some shots up. But just Oregon, I mean, I even saw when I was coaching high school basketball. I mean, there's no fans. Nobody goes to Oregon high school games, and nobody goes to Oregon college games either.
And it's like it's not for like a lack of talent. I mean, yes, it is, but when there is talent, when like Drew Eubanks is around, or like Kevin Love, Kyle Singler, like, I mean, when I was putting together the Pacific Northwest Hoops podcast, I mean, there is a ton of talent coming out of this area. I mean, especially if you expand it up to Seattle. And yeah, it's a complete afterthought sport here. I mean, Sabrina Ionescu was the only player that could fill MKA. It's crazy.
It's true. It's so true. Yeah.
I mean, Bol Bol couldn't do it. Like in Folly Dante, we got 5 stars. We got all these guys here. Nobody gives a fuck. So, I mean, honestly, yeah, it's an unpopular opinion, but I mean, I wish that this episode's podcast was more gearing up about like the post winter break basketball season. But I get it, you know, like football runs the world. It is what it is. Yeah, I caught a lot of heat for that. Also, I'm right now I'm catching a lot of heat on Twitter because I said I'm rooting for Washington in the bowl game.
Well, yeah. That's throwing up. You knew you were going to catch heat for that one. And although it is the right opinion, and it I agree with you. I am also rooting for Washington in the bowl game, but yeah.
I hate it, but it is. Yeah, yeah. I'm never going to say that I'm rooting for them, but I'm not rooting against them. I guess no, is what I'm saying.
Winning. Fair enough. I'm also fine with them losing.
Either way, it's kind of a win-win. But no, this has been a thing percolating in Shane for a while, I think. And we started this podcast. We really did do our best effort to cover all sports equally, and that's just not what the people want. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just really not what the people want. So we're gonna give you all the football content. And don't get us wrong, we love football. I enjoy football. But if I had to pick, I think basketball is probably my favorite sport also. So I don't know if I would allot things exactly like you did, Shane, but I mean, yeah, not that far off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you might feel, you know, more positively about the state of football and everything than I kind of do right now. I have a lot of doubts about football's place in society moving forward. So, I mean, we want to get much, much bigger.
We've had those conversations on here before. Yeah, for sure. We were unsure of football. I mean, a couple of years ago. Anyway. All right. Shane, last take. Got anything you want to get off your chest, my friend?
I got a couple here. I just got a couple bowl game ideas, ways to fix bowl season for me.
These are okay. All right. Yeah, go for it.
Make them basketball games.
Okay. Well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to shrink the teams down to 5-on-5. We're going to play on hardwood.
Put them on hardwood and indoors.
So the first one, a bowl game to kick off bowl season consisting of only transfer players.
I like it.
We call it the Portable is a name that was thrown around on Twitter. But yeah, just like all transfer, like incoming players or something like that. Or maybe, you know, guys transfer from D1.
Like a shrine game or something like that for transfer players. I don't hate that. I like that. Yeah.
Some tape out there.
Yeah.
Bowl games can only consist of underclassmen players. Get your juniors
like an Olympics type thing. Yeah,
interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so we get to see like, oh, what's North Carolina's, you know, next couple years gonna look like.
Okay,
I honestly love that.
I kind of like that idea too. You haven't lost me yet. I'm for both of these.
Playing on different surfaces, a la baseball stadiums. We kind of got into that one. Here's my new one: no coaches allowed on the sidelines. No, they're allowed to be there, but only in the booth. Sidelines just players and GA only.
Interesting. Yeah.
Govern yourselves.
I don't hate it. Yeah, I kind of like it. All right. What else you got?
I got two left here. One's kind of goofy and one is a little more serious. No special teams allowed.
I'm in.
Okay. All right.
The Ducks would win every game.
for a hot second, I thought it was what we were going to say. I couldn't believe Oregon would kick that field goal. I was like, wait, what the fuck? Yeah. It's only 4th and 6th. And then, so last one here. Each bowl game is matched up on your ranking. What a wild idea. 5 plays 6, 7 plays 8, 9 plays 10. And then bowl games can mean something moving forward for the next year. A little bit.
I like all of these for the most part.
Mostly in, yeah.
Yeah.
13th ranked Oregon playing non-ranked North Carolina, even they're both 9-win teams, seems a little goofball-y to me.
I am mostly in. All right. My last take. All right. What do I have to do to get you guys to watch Andor, because I'm back on this bullshit. I am 100%
close to starting it.
I will trade you guys. I will watch 3 episodes of any television show you give me. If you Succession? Will commit. Okay. All right. I'll watch 3 episodes of Succession.
I just started rewatching Succession though. The first 2 episodes are like kind of a
drag. First season takes.
Well, if I get three in, right. Though, I think that 3 is kind of an adequate,
but you're going to watch
almost it's almost like a Game of Thrones thing where like Succession, I would say that you need 7.
Interesting.
For most people to buy in.
First season.
I mean,
the second season so much
better. I'm willing to trade a season for a season.
All right. I'll do it. I'll watch Andor.
My fear is that he's going to watch 5 episodes of Succession, just quit doing the podcast. Maybe. You guys are bad people.
Yeah, because he realized what we like. Yeah. No, I'll do it. I've been circling Andor and I'm currently looking for a Shane? New show. So I will do it.
I'll give it a chance.
I don't
know what show I'd want you to watch and change, but we'll go with Succession. But I'm judge us too much off of 3 episodes though.
I'll watch the full season. I'll commit. I'll watch the full first season of Succession if you guys watch the whole season of Andor.
All right, it's like a book club.
Yeah, it's a deal.
Off-season book club.
Off-season book club. I love it. All right, gentlemen, good stuff as always here. As always, I just said as always twice. That was weird. That was very strange. I don't know why my brain did that.
Well, it's always, so.
It is always. Constant, yes, man. It is always. Take care, yo chicken. Take care, yo mentals. We appreciate you. We love you. We out.
Peace.
Sorry.
A little bit softer now. A little bit softer now. A little bit softer now.